by facts and driven by truth. Broadcasting live from beautiful British Columbia, it's Roadkill Radio. And now here are your hosts, Gary Simpson and Ron Gray.
Ron Gray, we're back in the studio.
Hello, Carrie. Wow.
Out here in beautiful British Columbia, the weather can't be any better.
It's been a month since I've seen you. You hardly changed at all.
It is a month already?
The program was off air for almost a month, and I saw you last week with Terry. That was great. Good to see you back.
And, it's nice to have you back here in the studio.
It's good to be back.
And we're going to be doing this often, Mr. Gray, because that good friend of ours, Terry O'Neill, is on the campaign trail again.
So he is, yeah. And that was good to hear.
We should track his activities, you know. I mean, last time when he finished the campaign and he came darn close, but I made a call last week. If you listen to the show, you know I predicted that he would win a seat this time. And I also predicted that our premier, Christy Clark, wouldn't call an election until she had to.
And you know, so far you're batting 1,000.
I'm getting really good at this. I mean, they should start paying me the big bucks because I've been good, and it's all on the record, people. I'm good at this, yeah.
And a lot has been happening during the time that we had our brief summer hiatus. Today I wrote a letter to the new president of the Canadian Museum of Human Rights.
Oh, no. So you're going to update us on that a little bit later on in the show, aren't you?
Yep.
You mean, now you've got me curious, Ron. They haven't.
You may recall.
I'm flabbergasted. Don't give all the details. Just give a tease.
7 months ago.
Seven.
Today, I wrote to the museum responding to their request for suggestions about what should be in the new museum when it opens.
So being the helpful sort you are.
$11 million. Yeah. I gave them the help they asked for. And 7 months. And I haven't heard a murmur.
Oh, well, I can hardly wait for the details on that one. But we have a big show tonight.
Yeah.
A little bit later on, Helen Ward, our good friend from Kids First, is coming in. And with a little bit of back-to-school advice for people. And, you know, going back to school is getting a little bit more complicated than ever. Any decade I can remember now, Ron, because the politics of public education is changing people's viewpoints on what they want from the schools or don't want from the schools. We do have an exodus out of the schools now. People are homeschooling. People are doing other kinds of things. But Helen is always a treasure trove of information. Everything from how they're tracking your family and the data they're collecting kindergarten.
Yes.
To all-day kindergarten. And, you know, the all-day kindergarten, it's just a tax grab, people. This is, you know, how they brought in all-day daycare that we could fund, right? But there's a study that's out that is claiming that this is a rip-roaring success, but I suspect Helen Ward has a different viewpoint.
Well, I'll be anxious to hear what Helen has to say. I mean, if anyone were to ask my advice on back to school, I would say, don't go back. That's a dangerous place to put your kids. Don't do that to them.
All right. And then mid-segment, we're going to do news with views and all the news that matters. Because, as you say, lots happens in this country, lots that many people don't know about. And, you know, we need a whole segment to do that. And now I'm dead curious about the latest development in the ongoing saga of Ron Gray and the Human Rights Museum.
Well, you understand, 7 months ago I wrote this letter to Arnie Thorstensen, who is the chairman of the board of this new $310 million museum that we're opening in Winnipeg. You and I, taxpayers.
Well, yeah, we fund this, people. I didn't vote on that, but I
No, nor did I.
We're just so generous, they just know we would throw some more money at it.
The Canadian Museum of Human Rights. And so last year, January of last year, I attended a conference that they held here in Vancouver where they wanted input.
Because, and you're an informed sort. You had a lot to offer this conference.
I have had some experience with the human rights industry.
There you go.
Yeah.
Personal experience.
Well, as I'm fond of saying, I'm one of the few Canadians who has a piece of paper from a government agency saying that I'm not a hate monger.
Okay, so. Not many people can give that over in Canada.
So I wrote a letter, and in it I suggested that there are some people who have been traumatized by being mauled by the human rights industry, and their story too should be part of the human rights.
There's a better word than mauled. Terrorized comes to mind.
Manhandled, brutalized. Yeah.
Star chamber experience. Mauled just doesn't do it. Mauled implies that you might come out alive.
I did. I came out alive.
But scathed.
But our friend Ezra Levant actually put the best phrase of it, and he said, "The process is the punishment. It doesn't matter what they decide in the end. The process is the punishment." Because it took a couple of years out of my life and $51,000. And I was just fortunate that there were some people who helped me with that.
So this is a legitimate human rights abuse that happened here in this country. Yeah. And that should be part of our history.
Exactly. I'm going to have things about the Kanagawa Maru, and we're going to have things about the internment of the Japanese during the Second World War.
Can I add my trauma to yours?
Oh,
then?
You,
and
yeah.
We'll just bolster it then.
Anyway, so today, when I learned that there's a new president, I wrote to him and said, 7 months ago, I made this presentation to Mr. Thorstensen, the chairman of the board, and also to James Moore, Honorable James Moore, the Minister of Canadian Culture. And 7 months later, I haven't even had an acknowledgement that they received my letter.
Well, you know why? That's why they got rid of the other guy, because he wasn't responding to you, obviously.
Well, I wrote to Stuart Murray, the new president. I think Thorstensen is still there as chairman of the board. This is one of those proliferating bureaucracies.
Oh, they just rotate people around. Gotcha.
It grows. Yeah. So I wrote to him and said, "I would be very grateful if you would investigate and find out what went wrong. How come neither of these important officers on our public payroll has not answered my letter?"
And how are you holding up through this process, Ron Gray? Are you feeling the pain?
I need therapy. I need therapy.
You know, they almost make you invisible, don't they?
Well, that's why I'm wearing my Roadkill Radio t-shirt. It gives me visibility.
And it makes a statement. Yeah. You are here. You are not going away.
And I am not going away. That's that part of the summer. Now, you had one that you told me about that, on the way to the studio, that just knocked my socks off. Apparently you learned from our friend Bill Watcott and or from LifeSite News that you and I, Madam Taxpayer, pay maternity benefits to people who abort their babies.
Well, and we're going to save that story for the middle segment, because that needs some discussion, and Carrie will definitely need some therapy on that one. But we're going to move now into our first segment of Ron Gray, because I know we've got some important guests and an incredibly important subject matter. Joining us down from the States is Leslie Botha and Norma Erickson, both involved with the same VAX program. Norma is the president. Leslie, you are the vice president, and we welcome you girls back to Roadkill Radio. I know, Leslie, you've been on our show before. Norma, this is your first time.
Yes, I have. Yes.
How are you?
I'm very good, thank you. Thanks for having us on.
Oh, listen, our pleasure, because we're sort of doing a back-to-school special. And part of back-to-school means injections for your kids. Gardasil rates right up there is one of how our country views as being an important vaccine. But I share a lot of your concerns about what's happening, especially through our public education system, because quite often parents don't even know about this. Now, I think last time we talked, Leslie, the questioning of Gardasil was sort of making its noise a little bit louder. But certainly there's enough information now that everybody should be putting the brakes on with this program to inject these girls. Down in the States, you have been monitoring what has gone on. Can you tell our Roadkill Radio audience what you've seen? What's happening down there?
Well, I can tell you, I can't remember the last time I was on your show. It must have been a year ago.
I think,
But the adverse reactions are now over 22,619 to be exact, 107 deaths. This is according to the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, which is the U.S. tracking system on all vaccine injuries. We know for a fact that this is 1 to 10% reporting of the vaccine injured population.
Okay,
so that means this could be 22,000, it could be 222,000, it could be 2 million. This is how phenomenal that this issue can be. All we know is that more and more mothers and girls are approaching us. We now have had girls who have been sick as long as the vaccine efficacy. What do I mean by that? They had the vaccine 3 or 4 years ago. They are still sick. They are not getting better. In fact, they're getting sicker because their body systems are running down because their body is trying to fight something. We don't know what that is. We may have a clue now, which we're going to be breaking here on your show tonight, but we have a major concern. A year ago when I spoke with you, Carrie, I don't know, maybe we were 100 strong. We're probably 1,000 strong now, thanks to the efforts of SaneVax and what Norma Erickson has done, and I want her to speak next. But we're in touch with researchers and educators and scientists and doctors all over the country. In fact, our website is SaneVax.org, and I invite your listeners to check us out online. At the very right-hand bottom of the page, there's a little box that says who's online, and there's a map of visitors. And we can actually track where people are all over the world who are looking at the SaneVax site wanting information about this potential deadly vaccination.
Okay, now let's
Norma, do you want to say, Norma, you want to get in there?
Yeah, Norma, I'm going to ask you to
Norma, I'm going to ask you to
give us some background on this, okay? Why is this vaccine in existence? How is it being delivered to young women and older women, I guess, too? But my concern is what happens through the public education system? Does the states allow public health nurses to go into the schools and try to convince young people that they should be having these injections? Norma, do we have you?
That is the case. In fact, California just passed a bill that has not been signed by the governor yet, but it would allow children 12 years old and over to make their own decisions as to whether or not they want this vaccination. In our opinion, as SaneVax, a 12-year-old does not have the capacity to understand that this is not a cancer vaccine. It's not an anti-cancer vaccine. It is a vaccine against two strains of HPV that may develop into cancer 30 or 40 years from now.
Okay, let's talk about that because there seems to be...
Yeah, we are talking, Carrie, we are talking about a virus that passes through 90% of women's bodies in 2 years. And Norma made a really great point there, is that they're giving this vaccine. It's been approved in the United States for girls and boys ages 9 to 26. It has not been approved for older women, and we consider that a personal victory. However, women don't get cervical cancer until their 50s or their 60s. This vaccine only has an efficacy life of 5 years. So what does that mean? Not only that, if people really start doing the research on this vaccine, they're going to see documents from our FDA, Food and Drug Administration, and other committees, biologic committees, that really raise some alarming questions about this. For example, in the clinical trials on Gardasil, 73.3% of the girls in the clinical trials developed new medical conditions, and 17 girls died.
That's
and I want to go back to what Norma was saying about California AB 499, which is the name of the bill in front of Governor Jerry Brown. This is really serious because this bill is sponsored by or promoted by Merck and Company.
Well,
California is about to go bankrupt. And our feeling is Merck is throwing money towards California because California definitely needs the financial support right now. And in order for this law to pass that girls can be, and we've heard horror stories coming out. I had a young girl on my radio show talking about this, that when she went to see her doctor, the doctor, the mother said, nope, she's not getting the vaccine. She's not getting Gardasil. She doesn't need this. And the doctor then said to the mother, can I talk to your daughter privately, please? And the doctor, who was female, took the mother or took the daughter aside and said to her, you know, I can give you this vaccine and we don't have to tell your mother.
That's outrageous.
It is outrageous. But this is already going on in California. Kaiser, which is a healthcare, everyone knows Kaiser, health insurance company, a mother asked for her son's medical records, and they said to her, her 13-year-old son's medical records, they said to her, I can give them to you now, but I will never be able to give them to you again.
Well, you know, we have...
Now, what parent does not have the right to have their child's medical records or to sit in on a consultation and make that decision about what vaccination, what drug that child should be getting?
Well, you know, here in British Columbia, we have a law that's called the Infants Act, which is exactly what you're talking about, Leslie and Norma. It says that, you know, a child at 12 years of age is competent to make medical decisions about themselves. They can give informed consent. What 12-year-old? I'm sorry, I have four kids. Never at any state in time were my 12-year-old children competent to give informed consent about important aspects of their lives, including what they were injecting into their bodies.
Can I just ask for some clarification of this? You're telling me then that if my 11-year-old granddaughter were to get this injection this year, then she'd have to have one every 5 years until she's in her 50s?
Repeat. Ka-ching, ka-ching, ka-ching.
Yeah, I hear the cash register ringing, yeah. Yeah,
you got that one. Absolutely. That's what this is all about. Yeah. Do you know what HPV stands for? It stands for Health Paper Vioxx. And that's what it stands for, and that's what it means to Merck Pharmaceutical Company.
I'll bet.
And we've
got
to put an end to it. Now, Norma has a story to tell that comes right out of Canada. Norma, why don't you tell these people how we were contacted by a mother in Canada that led us onto this trail of deception that we found contaminated vials of Gardasil. Deadly, potentially deadly biohazard contaminants in Gardasil.
No problem. I frequently get calls from parents and wondering
Norma,
why their daughter's injured, what to do about it, that
wait,
kind
Norma,
of thing.
Norma, I need
this
you
one
to,
was
really?
From
Norma?
A woman in Canada who's...
Hi, hello.
Norma, we need you to really speak up because
and right into the mic, right into the phone.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's better.
Much better.
This one was from the mother of a 13-year-old girl. She was 15 when she called, but when she got her Gardasil injections, 24 hours after the third one, she was diagnosed with acute juvenile onset rheumatoid arthritis. 24 hours.
Hmm.
Okay. This is 2 years later, and her mom calls and said, my daughter is still a virgin, and we just had her blood tested, and she's positive for HPV. And I'm going, that's not possible. HPV does not survive in the bloodstream. It's an epithelial virus that can only survive on skin and mucosal membranes. So at the end of the phone call, I said I would contact some experts and ask their opinions. And I called and called and called and got the same answer. Finally, we came down to, okay, there's only one spot where it could have come from, and that was the vaccine. Let's test a vial and find out. And what we found was, in our very first vial, two strains, HPV 11 and HPV 18. One promotes warts, one promotes cancer, genetically engineered, firmly attached to the aluminum adjuvant.
In the vaccine you tested.
And these people don't know what that means, Norma. So
well, no.
Those are medically engineered viruses?
A vial of Gardasil to a licensed lab in the state of Connecticut, Dr. Singhang Lee's lab, and he had it analyzed. He did PCR sequencing or PCR extraction and DNA sequencing. And what that does is this method will correctly identified beyond a shadow of a doubt all 100-plus strains of HPV that are there, that are out in the world. So let me repeat that. Natural DNA, natural HPV DNA, does not live in the bloodstream. It lives in the skin.
Right.
In the epithelial scales of skin or the mucosa. Yeah,
that's why
right, and that's why they're calling for, you know, anal cancer, oral cancer, cervical cancer, blah, blah, blah. It does not live in the bloodstream. The only HPV DNA that could live in the bloodstream is a genetically engineered, genetically modified. Does that ring a bell?
Yeah.
Yeah, now we're going somewhere like genetically modified foods that we're all becoming aware of the dangers of those types of foods.
Right.
So this is a genetically modified HPV DNA that's been found in the bloodstream, bound to the aluminum, which is stimulates the immune system.
Right.
Genetically engineered genetically engineered DNA is known to be a biohazard and has been classified as a biohazard. In fact, anybody who manufactures genetically engineered DNA has to follow strict rules and policies. The World Health Organization set up a committee to find out what levels of genetically engineered DNA are acceptable in the human body. The findings, we have no idea what those findings are, and they have not been released.
Okay,
so this,
but we do know that this is a biohazard, and this is in the 13 vials of Gardasil that were brought in, tested in this lab, from different countries around the world, different lot numbers, and different manufacturers.
Okay,
and
I
so
wanna,
this raises...
Leslie, let me ask you right there. How did you obtain these vials of Gardasil?
We had advocates stepped up to the plate and volunteered to find the vials and to send them in, and that is all I can disclose on that.
Well, no, and I had to ask that because here at Roadkill Radio, we get a lot of information that same kind of way. You know, people know about the work we do. They facilitate that kind of work. Because this kind of breaking news that you're giving here on Roadkill, this has got serious implications. You have a young girl who's now 15 who never experienced any kind of sexual activity with a sexually transmitted disease with only one explanation.
And the story gets worse, Carrie. There are so many girls that are developing cervical cancer, cervical dysplasia, abnormal pap smears, and again, this is being reported to VAERS, the U.S. tracking system, with only 1 to 10% reporting. The girls are under the notion that Gardasil is keeping them safe so they don't have to have pap smears. In fact, our ACOG, the American College of Gynecologists, I believe is what it is, has raised the pap smear guidelines level to age 25 in the United States. And it's similar in the United Kingdom. In fact, there was a horrifying story that just came out of the United Kingdom not too long ago, that labs were not testing pap smear cultures from girls under the age of 25. So here we have now a situation that if you don't get a pap smear until you're 25, but you get the vaccine when you're 9 years old.
Yeah, how convenient.
That you wait how many years to get a pap smear? And how many years does that cervical cancer, that contamination in the Gardasil vaccine, have a chance to grow in that young girl's body?
Okay, well, not
this
only
is a nightmare.
Well, Leslie, you also said something that perked something in my brain. You said these girls are getting this injection and then having this false security, this sense of false security that they're safe. They can go screw around as many people as they want now, right? We know.
Well, how about the birth control, Carrie? That's how we got into this mess.
Birth
control pill is being given to these young girls. They think they're safe because that's their mental, emotional maturity. They think they're safe. And all they're safe from is pregnancy.
Yeah.
Pregnancy doesn't kill them.
Yeah.
But
STDs
you're telling me
kill
that,
them.
You're telling me that this 15-year-old girl here in Canada who is still a virgin, was diagnosed with a sexually transmitted disease, and it was a lab-developed recombinant DNA strain of virus that was injected into her.
Well, no, that's not exactly what we're saying. Norma, you want to set him straight there?
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
We have, because this test was run as a normal test was, her samples were disposed of before it could be genotyped. So although her blood tested positive for the human papillomavirus, we do not have any proof that the human papillomavirus in her blood was the recombinant.
But you have these.
That is what started our investigation.
Gotcha.
Okay.
But we have no proof that that is exactly the case with her.
But the two strains that they found, nevertheless, they were injected into her.
Well, can't argue with that. But the deal is, she didn't have a sexually transmitted disease. She developed juvenile rheumatoid arthritis.
Ah, okay.
All right. That's where you got confused, and that's where we need to set the record straight right away.
Okay, thank you.
All right? The point being, and this is the point, HPV does not live in the bloodstream.
Yes, but they found
it. So after we eliminated the fact that she was not sexually active, she could not have contracted an STD because she was not sexually active, and eliminated all other scenarios, the only thing left was to look at the vaccine itself.
Okay, so what's this parent doing now? I mean, she's got a 15-year-old daughter with a chronic condition. A rheumatoid arthritis is not a fun situation to have to deal with, especially at 15 years of age. She's gone to you for help. What's the next step that's going to be taken, Leslie?
Well, that's a really good question, Carrie. Go ahead, Norma.
This particular parent has taken it to litigation. She is involved in a lawsuit for false advertising because it is not a cancer vaccine, and that's what she was sold the vaccine as.
I like your parent.
Yeah.
What province does she live in?
I don't think we're at liberty to discuss that because she is in litigation right now. And you'll just have to trust us on that, Carrie. All right, there's only so much that we can disclose without harming what is going on in these people's personal lives. It's not that we're not trying to be transparent. We're trying to tell the world as much as we can.
Well, the thing is, if it's gone to court, or maybe it hasn't gone to court, maybe she's just in the preliminary stages at this point. Because if it's gone to court, then it's public record. If we haven't got there yet, then I can understand.
That is correct.
Okay.
That is exactly correct. This is all new. But I will tell you this. This family now joins the 22,000 other families that are becoming financially destitute because of this vaccine.
Yeah.
Well, and
lives would be destroyed.
And you found samples of this vaccine from 13 different samples from around the world, and every one of them was contaminated with one or the other of these.
One or the other, or both, yes.
All
100%. 100% contaminated.
Okay, let's.
And that data is on our website, and it is available for people to see. We have the lot numbers, where they're from, and what the contaminant was. The vials were from New Zealand, Australia, Spain, Poland, France, and three states in the United States.
Okay.
All containing recombinant HPV DNA firmly attached to the aluminum adjuvant in the vaccine. There are more studies that need to be done on this. We need to be, what we wrote in the letter to the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, was we would like to request an investigation before more vials of this vaccine are shipped out to see if there is indeed this contaminant in more vials. We did 13. 13 is a drop in the bucket compared to the millions that have been distributed all over the world. But 13 out of 13, that's 100%.
Yeah,
that's
in anybody's book.
All right, so they wrote back and said, thank you for this information. This is crucial that we investigate, and we're on it.
Wouldn't you like to think so, Carrie?
Yeah.
You know I'm being facetious.
I know that. We actually, Norm and I are very brilliant marketing people. We keep thinking someone should hire us, like Merck and Company. But anyway, we sent a letter off to the FDA on August 29th. They received it. We tracked it. They received it on Friday, right before our three-day Labor Day holiday. And then Friday night, we started releasing everything.
Okay. And, of course, the FDA thanked you profusely for your help.
Okay. Not yet, but we doubt it. I mean, because here is the deal. There was not adequate testing done on the FDA's part or Merck's part before this vaccine was released. This vaccine was fast-tracked. Money.
Ka-ching. For just a second, when SV40 was discovered in the polio vaccine, here is a quote on the FDA's official position. And this is, quote, straight from the FDA documentation. Any possible doubts, whether or not well-founded, about the safety of the vaccine cannot be allowed to exist in view of the need to assure that the vaccine will continue to be used to the maximum extent consistent with the nation's public health objectives.
So, in other words, you, the people, are expendable.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, let's...
Any possible doubts, whether or not well-founded.
Okay, let's take this discussion, because I think this is where we need to go. We know enough. We are living in very privileged times because we can communicate with each other. We don't need conventional or downstream media, as we refer to it, that, you know, gets large advertising dollars from pharmaceutical companies and those kinds of things. We know not to trust the government. We know we should be questioning the government. We know how to get information and research, and we're fortunate enough to have in our midst at least some ethical and honorable people who are willing to put their careers on the line to tell the truth occasionally. We know all this. So at this point, are we not looking at a movement of personal responsibility here, girls? Because this is about people taking their health and protecting their children, in this case, seriously. Forget what the authorities are saying. Forget what the silly bureaucrats are saying. Forget what the public education system is. Do the research. Look at the information. Make an informed decision and protect your children. Do we need a mass movement of that kind of thinking to start happening in both of our countries?
Absolutely, because, you know, I'm not anti-government. It's just that government got bought out by corporate in the 1980s.
Yep.
And it's corporate that runs our government. We don't have a government by the people anymore. We have a government by the corporations.
Well,
and that's why this is so serious.
Well, it's interesting because I was talking to a very well-connected political friend of mine. And, Leslie, I'm going to have you back for one of these shows, because we're going to explore the whole birth control issue and the pharmaceutical multi-billion-dollar industry that's attached to that. We have some information that's going to be going public here in a few weeks that ties a lot of that in. But, you know, we really, really need to understand that there's billion-dollar contracts at stake here. And my well-connected political friend, we were having this discussion over a glass of wine. He said, Carrie, you know, I have to tell you, I was at a conservative convention not too long ago, and every table was being sponsored by a pharmaceutical company. You know, this is the gathering of all the politicals. Yeah.
Yeah. I have to tell you.
This bill in California is being promoted by Merck. We are fighting a mandatory Gardasil vaccination in the state of Colorado. There were Merck lobbyists all over our state legislature at the time. But that's exactly what this has come down to. And I would love to join your discussion on birth control. Until I got involved in the Gardasil issue, I was adamant about what was happening with this menstrual suppression movement that is now putting girls into early menopause in their 30s when they're ready to have children.
Well, let's not talk about breast cancer and all the other things that we know are associated with it as well.
We will do that too. However, we've got a big problem now with Gardasil. We do not know what this recombinant HPV DNA, genetically modified, genetically engineered, I don't care what you want to call it, if what that's going to do when it gets into a normal cell with normal DNA, what will happen? Are we creating now genetically engineered cells?
Yes. Well,
there's a scary thought. It doesn't get more Brave New World than that one. What happens to future generations?
I found a button on your website that led me to another website called thepetitionsite.com. And there's a petition there, Investigate Gardasil Vaccine Risks Now. Maybe give that address just once more. It's www.thepetitionsite.com. And you can troll around there for the
Garda. And that comes down from the National Vaccine Information Center.
Yeah.
And they are located out of Virginia, Washington, D.C. area. And they are tens of thousands strong.
Okay.
With people concerned about vaccinations.
I want to go back because I find this an interesting phenomenon. You guys have mandatory adverse reporting, of which we know that's...
No, thank you. Voluntary.
Is it voluntary?
Oh, it's voluntary. Oh.
Voluntary. And doctors in the United States of America do not even know it exists.
Well, that's what I was going to say. I was under the impression it was mandatory. Here in Canada, we have that same system. You talk about the adverse reporting. And shouldn't that send up a huge alarm right away for people? Why aren't we tracking the adverse consequences of vaccines? And we went through this up here with, of course, the H1N1 vaccine. Which I said was just an experiment by the government to see how many people would comply with their wishes. You know, that was a multi-billion-dollar little experiment there, too. So on the voluntary reporting, you have those numbers. And this is with a system that nobody even really knows about. You have 107 deaths?
Yeah, that is correct. And those numbers are going up all of the time. When we really started this, it was a year ago in March that we made our first presentation to the FDA. The numbers were at 13,000, I believe. It might have been 16,000, but I'm thinking 13,000. So they have gone up from them at that point in time. But here's the deal, Carrie. You know, this is why this subject is so hard, because we want to believe in our government. We want to believe in our doctors. We want to believe that vaccinations are good for us. So we get our daughters vaccinated. They get sick maybe a month later or a few months later. And the longer you go out from having a vaccination, the less likely you are to track back to it.
Mm.
The girls that we're really tracking is that the ones that they're really getting sick right away.
Yeah.
And these are all previously healthy girls. And here's the other deal. The clinical trials were done on healthy girls. Any girl who was not healthy or had a pre-existing autoimmune condition or a pre-existing allergy were eliminated from the clinical trials to make Merck and Company look good.
Yeah, well,
now, how many healthy girls do we really know that are out there?
Yeah.
How unfair is that?
You know, Leslie, I don't agree with you. I think we should be teaching people to always be questioning our government. You know, there's a very good saying that he who presents his case first seems right until another voice questions. And that should always be just part and parcel to what we do.
I believe you, Carrie. I agree with you. I am trying to appeal to parents who don't think like that.
Yeah.
And just to say, I understand where you're coming from. You know, you want to believe that you're doing the right thing for your daughters.
Yeah.
Or your sons.
Well,
or for your family. Or for your health care. And then, unfortunately, it's not until something like this happens that they start questioning.
Now, tell me, with the information that's given to the kids in the schools, then obviously there must be an information package that gives both sides of the debate on this, that presents all the information so that these kids can make informed consent.
Carrie, you're
We'd
making
love
the
to
ladies
see it.
Laugh.
Okay, so that's not happening in the schools either.
I want to tell our listeners that the website for SaneVax, that's Sane as in not insane, S-A-N-E, VAX.org, and it's really an informative and well-put-together website. There's a lot of information there. People should visit SaneVax with an X.org.
Okay, let's...
And Norma, Norma actually came up with the name for that. Norma, do you want to explain to them what SaneVax means?
Absolutely. It stands for safe, affordable, necessary, and effective. Mm. We believe that any vaccine on the market should meet those four criteria. It's a no-brainer.
Yeah.
Safe, affordable, necessary, and effective. If it can't meet those four, it shouldn't be marketed.
Well, I guess some would argue that it is effective. It's just not the effect that you and I want to see happen.
Well, no. I can shoot that one down right now because according to Diane Harper, who was the lead expert on the Merck's project on the Gardasil vaccine, and according to, the CDC, Norma, that said it would be 20 years before we know whether this vaccine is effective.
Wow.
And let's put it this way. Here's a real easy one for people to understand. For the 5 years that this vaccine has been on the market, 5 years and 2 months, adverse events reports have been coming in at the rate of 365 new reports every single month.
Wow. Okay, let's talk
about... And I think you said last night, out of the 76 vaccines that are approved by the United States, Gardasil makes up for 24% of all adverse injuries.
Okay, let's because time has gone by way too quickly. This is a very important subject. What are you doing now as far as your state legislatures go, as far as informing parents? Certainly there should be a push to get at least the requirement of informed consent, that they have to present this information to people. Are you getting politically any help whatsoever?
We're seeing some political action in the United Kingdom. We're seeing some in Spain. We are seeing some in Ireland. The United States, unfortunately, is, what can I say, not responsive. We've got a lot of people that are writing letters to their congressmen. We've got a lot of people writing letters to the FDA, the CDC, the NCI, all of the government organizations responsible for this decision. So far, we've had very little response other than there's nothing to worry about and pat us on the head and let's go on with business.
Well, you know, maybe it's a very good
thing.
But
we did have a press release go out today in Business Wire that went in front of the pharmaceutical companies and the financial analysts. We were picked up by CNBC and we were picked up by Market Watch. And those are two pretty hefty websites, and that's the day after Labor Day. We planned this well, so we know what we're doing. And here's the deal. The FDA sort of is the lighthouse, if you will, for the rest of the world. It is the regulating agency, of course, the United States, but the rest of the agencies around the world look to the FDA. So it is our primary role as SaneVax in this country to be targeting the FDA, to be unrelenting with the FDA.
And in Canada,
and that is what we are doing, and we're leaving the state legislatures, and Freda Barrow in Scotland is doing excellent work with the United Kingdom and Scotland, Alicia in Spain is doing a fabulous job. There's a whole group in India doing a fabulous job. So there are pockets of people that are working within their countries. What we're doing is focusing on the FDA and pushing and pushing and pushing the FDA so they have to respond to us.
Well, you know,
if they respond, then we can really say that we can start making some changes here.
I hate to say it, but probably the best news on this front is the economic collapse that's happening in the United States. Because if they actually run out of money, all these government programs are just going to have to go by the wayside.
Well, and then you get Merck stepping in and promoting AB-499 in California.
If
the government runs out of money, then the pharmaceutical companies who have more money than God are going to step in and foot the bill.
The banks, the new banks.
Well, and Ben Bernanke just prints more. And, you know, in Canada, I think Canadian listeners ought to be reminded that the man who is the prime lobbyist for Merck in Canada and pushing this vaccine is a man who used to be an assistant to our Prime Minister, Stephen Harper. A year after leaving that office, he was working for Merck. And our federal government bought $300 million worth of the vaccine and said to the provinces, here it is, use it if you like.
Well, and, you know, I suspect that the Roadkill Radio is going to have to resurrect its Reject the Inject campaign again.
Yes.
We were very successful here in Canada with informing people about the H1N1, well, we kind of called it, what was it, swine swooned and swindled. But yeah. We'll see what we can do to get some of this information out. Okay, good work. And just
can I just say one more thing, Carrie?
Absolutely.
On our website on the right-hand bar, we have a lot of programs, presentations, PowerPoints, but I'm asking your listeners to look at the HPV vaccine fact sheet.
Yes, it is
8 pages. It has documents that Norma and I referred to tonight, some of these statements from the government, graphs, data that people should download, print out, and start handing out to their government officials, start handing out to citizens. We put everything in a fact sheet so that they can talk intelligently to their doctors and have the sources and references to back it up.
Good stuff. All right, Leslie Bothus, you're a publisher, author, and activist, radio and television show host, and Norma Erickson, president of Sane Vax. And Leslie, I also know you're involved with Sane Vax in the capacity of vice president. Two very busy women on an important mission. Thank you both for joining us tonight.
Thank you, ladies.
Thank you so much.
Good night.
And we will do this again.
Wow.
Good stuff.
Yeah, you know, it's always good to hear citizens taking action like that. As she said, you would like to believe that your government is looking out for your interests. But
we know that now. Anyone that even has a belief, government, and, you know, it's like so many of the issues that we deal with here at Roadkill, Ron, a lot of very well-intentioned people get duped. For whatever reason, our lives are too busy nowadays. We want to believe that those that we're paying obscene amounts of our tax dollars to are actually working in the interest of everybody. But that's not how it works.
It just doesn't. That's right.
I mean, look at the H1N1. Remember, I gave the pharmaceutical company credit because in their information they said, basically, this is experimental. We have no idea what it's going to do, right?
That's right. And
our
they told
government,
us specifically it has not been tested on this group, this group, this group, this group.
And our government made a decision to withhold that information when the vaccine was being distributed.
Yeah.
So, no, don't trust the government, people. Put the government to the test of proving what it's doing is right on a whole bunch of fronts. And, you know, again, anything that's free has a cost. Don't ever forget that.
Well said.
All right, Mr. Gray, now we get to move into our news that matters. And not, I mean, you know, when we talk about these issues as they relate to pharmaceutical companies and genetically modified, you know, drugs now on top of all the food aspects and all the rest of it, it just, you know, this whole industry that's being created is one that we really do need to spend some time with. We do have a caller, so let's take the caller before we move into the next segment. Hello, caller, are you there?
Yes. Good evening.
Good evening.
Okay. This is kind of something perhaps to add in with the program, in line with the program that you have tonight. And this has to do with the vaccines. Focus on Gardasil. And also relating to vaccine injuries, where they're claiming that there is no association, for instance, with autism.
Hmm. Mm.
And it's coming out to be a very simple association. And when you do go ahead and administer these vaccines, you are going ahead and putting these T cells and beta cells, this is part of your immune system, into a kind of a hyperdrive. And you're just assuming that there's no genetic variants, no genetic defects in the body that will stop this inflammation or prevent it from from going on and on and on. I mean, when you use a lab rat, you know, to find out how good these vaccines are, it's perfect. That rat is genetically perfect, so to speak. He's fed a diet, you know, that specifically that helps his immune system give a certain amount of...
Okay, Colin...
Humans aren't that way.
No.
And unfortunately, we are getting into trouble. 59% of it has a GSTP1, GSTM1 genetic variant. Unfortunately, that affects the mitochondria, that affects how much toxins, including aluminum, that we take in. We're constantly using aluminum and antiperspirants. What I'm getting to all of this, we're not genetically perfect. When we do get these vaccines, they do cause a high amount of inflammation. Unfortunately, that affects the brain tremendously. Unfortunately, it produces a lot of cortisol. That cortisol, when you have elevated levels of cortisol, it starts killing neurons in the brain. Multiple vaccines with multiple adjuvants in it, especially when they're given close together, such as Gardasil vaccine, this is what's causing. The first thing you'll notice is memory loss. Then you'll notice a decrease in the immune system. And may I please add that the people who have gone ahead and said vaccines are safe, the part of the immune system that wasn't really even taken a look at, no one knew it existed until around 1995, which is the Th17 immune system. If a doctor graduated more than about 5 years ago, he'd never even heard of this. So these are the problems you're running into. The Th17 immune system, that's the part that's responsible for a lot of these immune diseases, because the very viruses that you have in your body, these are the ones that hijack it. And the idea with the vaccine is that it makes you healthy, and it makes you... Nothing could be further from the truth, because the problem is that once you never get rid of viruses, 1% of every virus that you've ever had in your life is still in your body. Mm. It just goes into the form of what's called a persister cell. It becomes dormant. The problem with inflammation is when you trigger the immune system so often with vaccines, you run the risk more and more of every virus that you've ever put in your body coming back to life. This is the big problem. If you don't put the virus in, if you don't put some of these things in your body, they're not there to come back and haunt you.
Yeah.
And this is the problem. You have a case of inflammation or hypercytokinemia that keeps on going on and on and on. In a perfect body, yes, there is a mechanism to stop it. But unfortunately, we are not perfect, and the documentation is there. I wanted to keep this as low-key as possible because I do intend to publish on this within the next year.
I was going to ask you to do the publishing. Obviously,
yeah.
Well, thank you, first of all, for calling in. I hope you send me an email that will keep all of it confidential until such time as you do publish this information. But I want to ask you a question. I did not vaccinate any of my four children. And it wasn't even vogue back then. It was just, then it didn't make sense. And, of course, we didn't have half the information that we have available now at our disposal to make informed decisions. But obviously you know far more than I do on any of this subject matter, but here in Canada and down in the States, why are we so opposed to the adverse reporting, making it mandatory? Why are we so fearful of demonstrating to the people what is really going on here?
Well, I also wear another hat. I am an associate member of the American Bar Association, and I can put it to you bluntly. If I was a doctor and I was to report that a vaccine that I gave caused an injury to another person, I could be held liable. Not the vaccine manufacturer, but me as the person who administered the vaccine. I would have to be going ahead, and I would have to know that person's history. And, of course, as a pediatrician, I would know that history, but did I actually take a look at it? Did I take a look at the pamphlet? Hmm. Was the vaccine manufacturer clear enough in his labeling of the product? And yes, there are several girls that, several women now that are in Canada that I deal with on a recovery protocol. But yes, the problem comes down to money.
Yeah.
You don't want to report something that could cost you money. If you're a school system and you're the nurse or you're the person who is talked into going ahead and giving this vaccine, or let's be honest, many of the times that a government goes ahead and purchases a vaccine, they purchase the vaccine to be distributed free. Mm. If they were to give this free to someone and it was known to cause a problem, then they would not only be out for the vaccine, but, you know, they would be out of the money. I mean, this is employing tons and tons of people. The ramifications of this are that you not only maybe harm someone, but there's someone down the line, they're going to need medical attention. So
right.
Who are they going to come back to? They're going to come back to you.
Yeah.
The bottom line is you shut your mouth, literally. You be quiet. And then you have to take a look at the big players in here. And the big players, for instance, who would expect that Donald Rumsfeld, who was former Secretary of Defense for the United States, also sat on the board of directors for a company called, I forgot the name of the company, but it was a pharmaceutical company, and they made that Tamiflu.
Yeah.
He makes money on Tamiflu. You take a look at some of the others, and John McCain. Cindy McCain, John McCain's wife, the statistics and the reports out there are that she owns about $25 million worth of this particular company's stock.
Mm.
So, I mean, it goes, you have to look at the liability. If somebody was to claim, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to report this, then there's a liability involved. If it caused harm, there's a liability involved.
Well,
I hope that answered a little bit of
and you're bang on. I'll give you a situation that happened here in British Columbia. Of course, with the H1N1 vaccine that was experimental, our government knew about it and purposely withheld giving information out on it. 4 days after receiving a vaccine, a mother died. A mother of six children, young children, and a tragic situation. I tried to help this father to as much as we could, and I called several lawyers that were just like, I deal with a lot in the legal field, so I know my way around the courts, I know my way around the law, and I know my way around lawyers. And I have never experienced the fear in their voices at the thought of taking on the government in this manner, you know, that these vaccines were not proven to be good. Finally, I said, and this was why I was interested in the Canadian case that our guest earlier referred to, because I really liked the strategy, and I thought that this strategy is best, false advertising.
That is true, and you hit on another subject, too. The very people who put the judges and the, many of have their fingers on many of the, politicians that elect them.
Yep.
It's not the common people. I mean, it's the money interests.
Yep.
For instance, if Merck heard that there is a problem with a vaccine, they don't go out and hire more scientists to take a look at it. I mean, they go out and, being blunt, they hire more attorneys to cover their tail.
Yeah.
This is what it comes down to.
Well, it's there's an industry attached to the whole judicial system anyway. But, okay, so then I'm going to ask you the same question I asked our guest. You've obviously been involved in this for a long time now. You have good insight into what's really going on here. When is all this going to change? Is it going to require the people to start
and
making informed decisions? Is it going to be creating within the public mentality the notion that you should be questioning what your government is doing and those kinds of things? Otherwise, we're going to see more and more and more, and up here in Canada, and now down in the States as well, this is creating a whole new, it's job creation for our whole medical medical industry. I mean, God forbid if we have healthy people that don't need drugs and hospitalization.
Ouch. You said something that is extremely critical, and if you would permit me to, you know, have the luxury of having a full minute on this. When the state of Florida found that they were running out of money for care for the elderly, they simply went ahead, and it was the Hospice of the Florida Suncoast. And here's what was happening. People were coming down here to Florida. They were running out of money. Their insurance would run out, and they'd find themselves in a nursing home. Well, there was a statute passed that said that if a person ran out of money or their insurance ran out, that the nursing home would be responsible. The nursing homes didn't like that. So they went ahead, and if you remember a test case called the Schiavo case, where there was a young lady, and under some very strange circumstances, she found herself in a coma, and she had been there for many years.
Yes.
Make a long story short, she was healthy, she was fine, but the husband, well, he had other interests, and they did not include her.
No, I remember the case well.
Okay, so the press and the press releases and the powers to be made this look like this was a situation where, oh, the husband wanted so desperately to go ahead and keep his promise to his wife that, you know, she wouldn't have to live like this in a quote, vegetative state, unquote, and that he would sit in judgment for her in the court system. In the United States, they have that substituted judgment where another person actually sits in for a person who can't communicate.
Right.
Okay. So anyway, what this whole deal was, when you look at it on paper from the legal standpoint, it was we need to get rid of this statute and we need to have some technical bounds and we need to make a test case. So here's the deal. We go ahead, we put a person on a feeding tube, and we claim that this, under the law, means that they are dependent on artificial nutrition and hydration. Therefore, if we remove this, then by law, they would not, you know, they couldn't live.
Right.
Now, there was a Judge George Greer that they posed this question to, but the press, Fox News, and many of the others, It's the parents, the mother and the father, versus the wishes of the husband and the wife. Make a long story short, there were so many things that were wrong with this case. There's so many things with Judge George Greer, and if you look at his when people went ahead and asked for retrial, 75% of his orders were overturned on appeal.
Hmm.
So this gives you some idea of how this judge, how qualified he was.
Credibility wasn't just ringing through the halls with him, no.
No, but the money was. Hmm. And you'll notice that when the parents went, they had, just one attorney who was acting pro bono. And when you notice that the appeals court to the United States District Court occurred, there was about maybe 12 to 15 lawyers who appeared on behalf of the plaintiff, on behalf of, the Schiavo, who was asking that his wife be put to death. But,
right. Murdered,
well,
basically.
Anyway,
yeah.
The documents are blah, but what this was a test case. The bottom line of all of this, if you make it look like something and put it under the eyes of the people that it's just, the parents and they're arguing about something and this poor woman, look, the whole deal was that, she couldn't eat by herself. But if you look at every single one of the videotapes, she supposedly couldn't swallow. But did you notice she never drooled?
Yeah.
The tests that they gave her, they were for a sighted person. At autopsy, they found out that she couldn't see.
Hmm.
So what
sounds
you do
a lot like
is
the Terry Schiavo case. Yeah.
It is the Terry
Schiavo. Go ahead and you construct tests, and they look like this person is totally vegetative. Mm. She can't swallow, even though, you know, obviously she's not drooling, so she's swallowing her own saliva, so you know she can swallow.
Right.
But anyway, this is the thing. This is the kind of thing you put it, you know, before the people, and you put it as something else. And it reminds me of that saying that Hitler had. It gives us, how does it say? It gives me great pleasure to take a look and see that the people around don't even know what's happening to them.
You know, and that is the what we are dealing with on so many of these fronts to our anonymous caller. And I look at these various issues that we deal with, because we deal with quite a bit of this on Roadkill Radio. We tend to look beyond what's presented and actually do the questioning and say, wait a minute. Sometimes government listens to us. We'd like to take a lot of credit for bringing some sanity to the H1N1 scandal. But, you know, there's when people start allowing their children to be injected with a vaccine that, and I guess where I'm getting really sort of ticked off at the citizenry, if I can put it that, the information is out there if you want it. But then I get, well, I was bullied into this. I was bullied into that. And I can relate to that, too, because I didn't vaccinate my kids. And as they went through school, you know, every year I would get a call from the public health nurse. And she said, Mrs. Simpson, you know, we don't have any record of Esther being vaccinated. And we finally you kind of make this into a sport, you know. So I'd respond by going, well, maybe you're the one. And she'd go, what do you mean the one? The one that will sign away any immunity from liability if anything happens to Esther if I get her injected with whatever vaccine you're choosing for this week, you know? And you know, I never have received one person willing to step up to the plate and sign that document for me yet, you know?
Golly.
And it really ended the conversation quickly, too. It was one of those magical word thing, you know? And accountability does resonate some wisdom. And one of the things I've always said, and I mean, down in the States, as up here in Canada, we can't sue pharmaceutical companies. Built into their contracts with our respective governments, they're immune from liability. Am I right there?
You are correct. And most of the governments even have certain caps on them. For instance, in the United States, I believe there's a cap on of $100,000, which basically would be a pittance compared to the comparison. But I'm sorry, there's one thing I really neglected to bring out, and maybe this, let me just drop kind of a bomb on you.
Be my guest.
And I'm not a conspiracy theorist or anything like that. This is pure medical fact. This is what I deal with. If it's not published, if I can't find it, you know, some absolute source to back it up, I won't say it. But here's the cold, hard fact on inflammation. You know, you hear so much about inflammation, but you don't really know what it does.
Hmm.
And one of the things that it does, it limits life. And this is how it does it. You know, this theoretical limit that a person can live 120 years, that's based on the human DNA, and then towards the bottom of the helix, you have the RNA, which, you know, tells the cell what it's going to be, whether it's going to be hair, muscle, or whatever. And then at the very end, you have what's called the telomere.
T-E-L-O-M-E-R-E. Dolly the sheep had short ones.
Yeah. These are the ones that, whenever the cell divides, there's another pair that breaks off, and they do not, they don't regenerate. You don't get another pair. So when you run out of telomeres at the end of each cell, at the end of each DNA helix there, that cell turns cancerous. Hmm. And right now, there's no way to turn that around. As a matter of fact, if you take a look at what the United States is doing right now, and I'll ask you if this is a theory type of, a thing where you can kind of limit population. You see lately that there's another bill that allows the FDA, potentially allows the FDA, to go ahead and bring vitamins, anything that would be an anti-inflammatory, whether it's a herb or whether it's a product like N-acetylcysteine, for instance. N-acetylcysteine, you would typically you'd use it in the neonate ward to go ahead and help get the bile flowing on a young child, when the duct is closed. Yep. A little bit. But people don't know that you can also use N-acetylcysteine as a very potent protector of these telomeres.
Hmm.
So it's a cheap and effective way to extend life.
Hmm.
But, if you go ahead and you start cutting off different things, for instance, alpha-lipoic acid goes ahead and it stops inflammation through this NF-kappa-B triggered path. So, literally now, you can stop a lot of, what this not only does, it can stop, throttle you down for heart attacks and everything else.
Yeah.
So... Well, why would a government want to regulate things like this unless perhaps they would not want maybe the citizens running, forcing them to run out of money through some type of Social Security or something?
This is what I'm going to say is going to shock you, but, our government did exactly the same thing up here just a few months ago. Not only that, it's brought in regulatory regulations now about labeling. It's sending SWAT teams into little compound pharmaceuticals that would dare, sell lavender oil and all those horribly potent, terrible things. It also, in our infinite wisdom up here in Canada, gave jurisdiction over to foreign governments, not even defined in the new statute. We're thinking maybe the World Health Organization, those kinds of things, and to regulate what goes on here in Canada.
And adopting the European Codex Alimentarius.
There you go. So yeah. We know you're shocked at that bit of bizarre information from Canada, thinking that we're so logically civil up here, but I got bad news for you. this is the stuff that revolutions are made of, I think, once people start getting the idea about what's going on in the various aspects. And you mentioned limiting population. Up here, there's a movement to get our provincial government here in British Columbia to fund 100% birth control pills to all the girls. And fortunately, somebody handed me a brown paper envelope with some of the literature that was being sent to the government by our representative of Planned Parenthood up here that talks about, the more importance that these people, if they're pregnant, they can't be in the workforce. This is all about increasing the tax base and not having, children or being away from the workforce. So there's a lot of very political agendas that are transpiring that are becoming more transparent simply because all of us now have the ability to communicate with each other. However, how long that happens for, I'm not sure, because we have a bill up before in Canada on our federal front trying to limit our ability to communicate and reduce our internet access and freedoms and all the rest of it. But, listen, we have to move on. I just 100% appreciate you calling in. I would love to get some contact information. It will be safe.
Drop us an email.
Yeah, and we will continue this discussion in a future date, and a not too distant future date, if you're up for that. You'll just be our anonymous expert on Roadkill Radio. I like it. Thank you so much.
Will you send us an email?
That I will do.
Okay, thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
You know, there's something brainless about that strategy you're talking about, Carrie, to increase the tax base by diminishing the workforce, by cutting down the population. How does that work?
It doesn't work.
No, of course
and
not.
That is probably a prime example of some of the stupidity that's going on as far as the decisions make.